Welcome to The Food Teacher on UK Health Radio, the show about food and your health.
Welcome to today's show, which is linked to our quest to find the ideal diet for optimal health and vitality. Now, where would you start looking? Well, there seems no better place to start than the Mediterranean. Aside from the sunshine and the blue skies, their diet has some amazing ingredients. And perhaps it's the combination of these which brings greatest benefits. But they have one key ingredient which has widely been accepted to have various health claims and has long been recognised as a health food throughout generations. Can you guess what it is? Okay, it's none other than olive oil. And on today's show, we have two experts in the field of olive oil and the Mediterranean diet. Coming up, we'll be talking to Miguel Torrubia Mateus. He's a health professional specialising in nutrition for healthy ageing and cognitive enhancement. Miguel was born and raised in Spain, so he can actually share his experience of the Mediterranean from a very personal perspective. Our first interview today is with Judy Ridgway. She's an acclaimed food writer and international expert on olive oil. She was trained by the then EEC and commissioned to define a now generally accepted vocabulary for describing olive oil. She was also the first non-Italian judge to sit on the judging panel of the prestigious Leon Doro Awards for Olive Oil, which takes an authoritative look at the science behind the headline. So, it's with great pleasure that we'd like to welcome Judy to UK Health Radio to tell us more about this ancient superfood of the Mediterranean. So, a huge welcome to Judy Ridgway for coming on to UK Health Radio. So, hello, Judy.
Hello, Kate. Glad to be here.
Great. So I wonder if I can go in with asking you our first question then. I wondered if you could perhaps tell the listener how you became so interested in olive oil.
Oh, I certainly will. I mean, that's the question I'm often asked because they say, you know, how come an English woman like you, probably brought up on butter and lard and things like that, get into olive oil? And it was because I was a wine writer.
Okay.
I was travelling all the areas that produce the wine, and they're much the same as those that produce olive oil.
Oh, wow, interesting.
Yeah, I got interested because they would serve their own olive oil at meals and so on, and it just seemed such a sort of thing that went hand in hand.
So you have a real good taste palette for olive oil, obviously, as well, alongside the wine tasting.
I think that did stand me in good stead, actually, because I did all the Wine and Spirit Education Trust exams, and there's a lot of blind tasting. And in fact, the techniques I use for tasting olive oil now are similar. They're not the same, because, of course, the two products are different in some ways, but it was very, very useful to me.
Oh, wow. And really interestingly, I read in your bio that you actually became the first non-Italian judge on a really prestigious panel for olive oil tasting.
I was, yes. That was really got quite a big thing. It so happened that I was asked to do a demo on oil at the Chef Show in London. It was sponsored by the Italians and the Spaniards jointly, and they both wanted to put up their own expert, as you can imagine. And I was the compromise choice. And the guy from Italy came over to see what on earth I was going to say, and long and short of it was that he was happy and invited me to sit on the Leone d'Oro panel.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant. And have you done that for a number of years?
Yeah, or? I did it for 8 years, but after 8 years it gets a bit tedious because on the whole you're looking for faults, but as well as the good flavours, and it is hard work.
So, obviously, you've just worked with Dr. Simon Poole and written a book that I know you're going to tell us about. But I wondered why you classify olive oil as a health food, and what is some of the evidence behind that?
Gosh, well, we've got all day. I mean, well, I think the thing was, in the past, the ancients, and even, you know, more recently, people in the countries where olive oil is produced always thought it was extremely healthy. And there's lots of anecdotal tales about why it was so good. What's happened, though, is modern research, scientific research, over the last 10 to 20 years has begun to prove that they were correct and that it does have a lot of health benefits. And it really, you know, from heart and chronic diseases like heart and stroke, diabetes, but right through to Alzheimer's, digestive disorders, you name it, there's probably a benefit in taking olive oil, either in prevention of the condition or indeed in some instances of helping to make it better.
Wow, and I'm sure we might touch on some of that as well.
Absolutely.
As we sort of go through the interview. But I mean, since the 1960s and the 1970s, fat has really been labelled the bad guy in our diet.
Yes, I mean, that was a result of some research that was done in southern European countries, where they discovered that people's risk of heart disease was very much lower than it was in places like America or the UK. And the diet there was monounsaturated fats, i.e. vegetable oils and olive oil, rather than saturated fats, which of course come from butter and lard and dairy produce. And they assumed that it was the monounsaturated fat which was good for them.
Okay.
But not monounsaturated. In those days, actually, to be correct, they really only separated into saturated and unsaturated.
Okay.
And so they thought, well, okay, everybody should have unsaturated oil, but they shouldn't have too much of it. And so that was how they went for the vegetable oils, which are so prevalent today, the polyunsaturated vegetable oils.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously there are different types of fat.
Yes, there are. I mean, the three main ones, which are the saturated fats, which we've said are in dairy produce, particularly butter, and also things like lard and suet.
Yeah.
Then there are the unsaturated fats, which are split into two types. Monounsaturated, which really only occur in olive oil and then in rapeseed and avocado oils, and then the polyunsaturated fats, which are all the others which come from the seeds, you know, sunflower seed, corn oil, safflower seeds, and all of those, and nuts too. And so you've got the three different types of oil, and the research has been centering on the unsaturated fats.
Okay.
Where they've found that the monounsaturated fats are better for you than the polyunsaturated. Hence the beginnings of the research into olive oil as being the major source of monounsaturated fats. And really it was just taken for granted that saturated fat was bad for you, and
yeah.
It wasn't really researched. But in recent years, particularly the last couple of years or so, a lot of doubt has been cast on whether even saturated fats are bad for you.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting, because the Mediterranean diet does in itself have quite a lot of saturated fat in it as well, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, not a lot. I mean,
okay.
It's really in the dairy produce from sheep and goat's milk.
Okay.
And we get into quite a lot of deep chemistry here.
Yes.
In the all saturated fats are not the same.
No.
And it depends on the length of the molecule, of the fat molecule. And the fats which come from goat's milk and from ewe's milk have medium length molecules, which are not absorbed as easily as long length molecules that you get in the cow's milk fat.
Okay.
It's like this all the way through, actually, when we're talking about nutrition, you know, all fats are not the same, and
yes.
Each of the different types of fat are not the same, and it's the same for carbohydrates and proteins too.
Okay. So also, I guess, when we talk about heated or being used cold, fats, you know, their molecular
structure
changes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a misconception I come across all the time.
Okay.
I just had a really useful book, actually, from a heart specialist that does a little book on diet and lifestyle. But at one point in there, which was wrong, was that the benefits of olive oil can only come if you eat it cold or raw. That's just not true. I mean, provided the oil doesn't smoke, then you get the benefits at any temperature. And the smoke point of olive oil varies from about 200 to 220. But the temperatures in a domestic kitchen, you know, even if you're deep fat frying, don't get higher than 190.
Okay.
And so there really is no reason why you shouldn't use olive oil for all forms of cooking.
Okay. And I mean, many people ask me, what is the best oil to cook with and, you know, heat? Would you recommend olive oil for that?
I would. There is a slight difficulty.
Okay.
I would recommend, certainly, if they want to buy refined olive oil, it's cheaper. It has the same monounsaturated fat content, and it has a smoke point of 225. So you are 100% safe for really hot temperature cooking with a refined olive oil. Now, if you buy an extra virgin olive oil, the difficulty there is that the smoke points vary from oil to oil. It could be just under 200. It could be as high as 225. So if you're doing really high temperature cooking, you can't be 100% sure about the smoke point. But you can sort of see the smoke point,
yeah.
Point number one. And point number two is that really you're not going to get to those temperatures.
Okay, yeah. So what would be the difference with cooking with polyunsaturated fats?
Well, the only difference there is polyunsaturated fats, you can be certain, will be 220 plus, but they don't last as long. You can do more fryings with extra virgin olive oil or ordinary olive oil than you can with a seed oil because of the non-fatty acid components which are in the oil.
Okay, and a lot of people talk about trans fats and how fats become damaged when they get heated.
Well, trans fats, yes. I mean, they are heated specifically to very high temperatures to allow oils to solidify at room temperature. Okay. And that process is detrimental to any oil.
Okay, right. So if we go back to olive oil, obviously I'm aware that it comes in very different grades, even when you look at it in the supermarket. What could you tell us a little bit about the different types of olive oil and then which ones are better for
our health? I think this is really very important because the main difference, of course, is between ordinary olive oil or extra virgin olive oil.
Okay.
And the difference is that the olives are picked, they're brought to the mill, they're pressed, out comes the juice from the olive, and that is separated into oil and water. Now, if that oil comes up to the regulation standards for extra virgin status, it just goes straight in the bottle and out on the market. Nothing else is done to it at all. If it doesn't come up to the standards required, then it's sent to the refinery where it's cleaned up and then flavoured with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and then put in the bottle and sent out. So that you can see one has gone through no processing at all and the other's gone through a refining process. So that's the difference between ordinary olive oil and extra virgin.
Okay.
Now the refining process removes everything from the fat except the fat itself. If you look at the chemistry of olive oil, it's made up of monounsaturated fatty acids to about, I suppose about 98% or something like that. But there's 2% of chemical components which are not fats at all. They're all sorts of things. They're vitamins, they're antioxidants, they're polyphenols, they're flavonoids and so on. But those are stripped out in the refining process. And that's the big difference between extra virgin oil and ordinary olive oil. Ordinary olive oil is still good for you because the benefits of the monounsaturated fat are not changed. They're still there.
Okay.
And it's quite a good product. But increasingly, the research is showing that it's these non-fatty acid components along with the monounsaturated fat which makes extra virgin olive oil so healthy.
Okay, so you've got the complete package there.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
Ah, excellent. Okay, and, you know, as a consumer, if I buy olive oil, I often buy it in the supermarket.
Right.
How do we know if we're going to be purchasing a really good quality product? And if we don't go to the supermarket, is there somewhere else where we can really get a good olive oil?
I think the difficulty is that in the supermarket, everybody's conspiring to keep the cost as low as possible.
Yes.
Which quite often is a laudable aim. But with olive oil, the cheapest olive oil is not necessarily the best. And so the first thing I would say is that if you pay a little bit more for your oil, you will get a better oil. So instead of buying perhaps a supermarket-owned label or a branded oil, if you can look for an oil at, say, £6-7 instead of £3, £4, or £5,
okay,
you will be getting a better oil. It'll taste better, be more interesting to use, and it will also have more health benefits. And if you go up the scale, yeah, they will get slightly better, but there comes a point when really there's a cut-off. And so, you know, if you're going to be asked to pay maybe £15-20, I would question how much better that oil is. A lot of it is packaging, a lot of it is making it look superior and to make it eye-catching. And that isn't necessarily, the best thing.
Okay, and where do you buy your olive oil?
Sorry?
Where do you buy your olive oil?
I get my oils from the producers usually, but I am doing a spot check at the moment to write on my blog of off the shelf. So just buying oils and seeing what they're like, because of course I'm privileged to get an oil directly from the producer and it's going to be their best one.
Yes.
And is that what, you know, the rest of us are getting off the shelf? So I'm checking that.
Oh.
But I would actually go to either maybe a specialist shop or somewhere that sells a lot of olive oil. You might find perhaps your cheese shop sells olive oil and has a good turnover in oil, or your wine shop. So you don't necessarily need to go to, you know, very market or specialist shops to buy.
Okay, so you mentioned their turnover. Once it's been bottled, how long would it last?
Well, a good oil will last up to 18 months.
Okay.
Lesser oils probably about a year. That's before they're opened.
Okay.
Once you open them, then you really ought to use it fairly quickly. If you open, say, a half-litre 500ml bottle, you ought to use it up within a couple of months. If you're someone that doesn't use much olive oil, I would recommend buying smaller bottles, even though they might be a bit more expensive.
Okay. And would you recommend in the fridge or on the room
temperature?
You don't
need to put it in the fridge at all. No, it will solidify in the fridge because it sets at about 6 degrees centigrade. Perfectly all right to have it out, you just don't want it in a hot place.
Okay, and is it better to buy something in a tinted bottle so it's not exposed to so much light?
Yes, very, very, very much better. Olive oil is deteriorated by light.
Yeah.
So you're better in a tinted bottle or a tin.
Okay. So for somebody who's listening to this show, they might be thinking, okay, you know, it's reputed as a health food. How could you include more in your diet?
Oh, gosh, there's lots of ways to include a little bit more in the diet. Let me think of some good ideas. I've got some ideas here, I think, in the book. I was just going to have a look.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is people tend to use them for salads and for pasta.
Yeah.
I think of that quite easily. But think about using it with your vegetables, for example, to use it in mashed potatoes instead of butter.
Yeah.
Or a really nice one is if you're doing carrots, for example, where you might either mash them with butter at the end or serve them with butter or perhaps even cook them in butter if you're doing Vichy carrots, use olive oil.
Okay.
And also a really good one is instead of just searing, you know, red peppers under the grill or in the oven to use in various sort of salads and ways, if you just poach them in a frying pan in a little olive oil and just leave them over a very low heat and they're just not simmering, just very, very lightly poaching.
Okay.
If you cook in this way, cooking vegetables with olive oil, you actually get more of the nutrients out of both the olive oil and the vegetable than you do if you cook them separately.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so there's a lot of sort of synergies like that with olive oil and certain foods that either make them even more healthy as a joint combination than they would be separately, or the olive oil will protect against some of the problems that there might be, for example, with barbecuing meat and where you get the searing effect and you get amines produced which are not good for you. If you marinate the meat in olive oil first, then you get far less of the bad chemicals in the final dish.
Yeah, okay. And what sort of quantity, if you're thinking about olive oil as a health food, would you recommend?
Oh, at least a tablespoon per person per day.
Yeah.
Two, really. In fact, European Union allows a health claim for olive oil for heart disease, prevention of heart disease, on 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil a day.
Oh, wow.
And 3 is even better. They've done some research where people were on 2 tablespoons a day or on 3 tablespoons a day, and the prevention of chronic diseases was increased, the percentages, by the more olive oil that people had. So 1, 2, 3, great.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I wonder if you could just touch, you've obviously mentioned heart health. Could you perhaps touch on a couple of other conditions that have been linked to olive oil being supportive?
Yes, certainly. Alzheimer's disease and dementia.
Wow, okay.
And we've had diabetes, haven't we?
Yeah, do you know the mechanism behind why it's so supportive for brain health?
Yeah, I've got some basic detail here, which is really actually particularly interesting. But on the diabetes front, what happens is it reduces the glycemic load. If you eat olive oil with carbohydrate foods, it decreases the absorption of sugar and so reduces the glycemic load of the meal. You know, the glycemic load is where the absorption of sugar is going on. And so if you're having carbohydrates with a lot of simple carbohydrates in it, it breaks down quickly into sugar, and so can give you too much, and the body might not be able to deal with it. If you use olive oil and complex carbohydrates, then you don't have the problem.
Oh, wow, that's interesting when you think about the Mediterranean diet, because they do have a lot of pasta.
Well, they do a lot of pasta, and pulses are partly carbs and part protein. Also, I mean, there is a certain amount of bread, too, which is in the diet, certainly in Greece in the Middle East, pita bread.
Yeah.
And so, yes, but the olive oil mitigates against the problem.
Okay. And then the protection for the brain, what was your take on that?
No, I think you'd have to ask my colleague Simon on this. when we get into the health sections, he's the guru on it. And so I'm not able to give you the absolute detail on that, but there's another quite interesting one, actually, is on reducing blood pressure. If you combine olive oil with the green salad vegetables, because they're rich in nitrates, that's important to get it right. It's the nitrates in the green vegetables. It produces nitro fatty acids, which can reduce blood pressure.
Oh.
But again, the combination,
yes,
olive oil and the green vegetables, and of course there's loads of green vegetables, particularly in the Greek diet.
Yeah.
And it's these sort of basic things which are important. I mean, for example, if you cooking fish in olive oil, it protects the heat-sensitive omega-3, which is in fish. Omega-3 is particularly difficult to get into the diet. Many people have too much omega-6 and not,
yes,
enough omega-3, whereas if you have olive oil with the fish, then you don't lose the omega-3 polyunsaturate in the fish. It doesn't break down.
Okay, so it's kind of protective of that,
yeah,
anti-inflammatory.
That's right.
Oh, wow. So you yourself and Dr. Simon Paul have just published a book, The Olive Oil Diet,
right,
which is Nutritional Secrets of the Original Superfood. Would you like to tell us how the book came about?
Yes, we met about 3 years ago, and he'd been doing research into the nutrition and research of olive oil. I'd been looking very much at quality, taste and flavour. And as we talked, we realised that, in fact, the two were related. The reasons why an oil is particularly healthy were very much the same reasons as why it had a very good flavour combination and was a high quality or maybe an award-winning oil. And there was a lot of synergy between the two. And he was keen, really, to get people to understand what's happening in the research. You know, the research comes out one at a time, you read a report, gosh, that's amazing, and then you forget about it.
Yeah.
But they really add up into a really quite compelling argument on the health benefits of olive oil. And he was answering some of the questions I had about why the olive oils were tasting the way that they do. And also, graduates, people coming on my courses and so on, were asking, well, you know, can I cook with it? What is it right about this? And the research is coming through. And we felt that really to try and put the two things together, not just the science, but really a whole way of eating and living, which would, you know, help people to change their lifestyle and their eating patterns to be more healthy, but also not to make a big deal about it, for it to become normal eating. So the book has a lot of suggestions for combinations of food, but also recipes and so on, which will, you know, help you to get your 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day.
I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I thought it was fascinating.
Oh, so pleased.
And whilst you were researching it, was there anything surprising that you learnt about olive oil that you didn't know about?
Well, I certainly learnt an awful lot about how the importance of antioxidants and how they work in the body, which I didn't understand, because I had to understand each section as Simon wrote the science bit and then put it into everyday English. So I had to understand it first.
Yeah.
So I really did learn a great deal about how olive oil works in the body. And then also some of the things, for example, the misconceptions and also our wives' tales. I mean, there's always a tale that olive trees like stress. And I said to Simon, well, yeah, that's true, but if you plant an olive tree on a really fertile piece of ground, it'll go wild, it loves it.
Yeah.
But Simon said, yes, but because it's happy, it won't produce its own antioxidants.
Because
if you put it in a stressful position, it will, and then we'll benefit from them.
Oh,
so there were things like that which really mixed in and made a lot of sense.
Goodness. Wow, so you haven't taken on your own olive grove now, then?
Too much like hard work. Enough writing about it.
So I wonder, could you tell the listeners how they could get themselves a copy or perhaps find out a little bit more about what you do?
Yes, yeah, certainly. The books are available in Waterstones shops.
Yeah.
Also on Amazon.co.uk. And they're also available on WH Smith, which I understand at the moment has a 30% discount.
Okay, excellent.
That's online. Otherwise, for more information really about me and about Simon and about the book, either on my website, which is oliveoil.org.uk, or on a new website that we're setting up, which is going to be called Olive Oil Diet. So that's www.oliveoildiet.co.uk.
Excellent. And I know that you've offered a free copy of the book for,
yes, that's
for
right.
a competition, which I'll put out there on social media after this interview.
Great.
So thank you. So, well, thank you so much, Judy. It was really, really fascinating. And I hope people go out and buy the book, because that you there's just so much information in
well,
there.
Well, I hope they do, because, you know, in an interview like this, I sort of want to say everything and can't.
Yes, exactly.
there's so much there. It's you know, if you're really interested, it's a book to read through, but it's also very much a book to dip in and out of when you want to learn a bit more.
Definitely. I found that as well, and I found it quite easy to read. It wasn't complex science. It was very straightforward, but also linked to the research. There was really clear evidence about what you were saying.
That's important, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Judy, for coming on UK Health Radio. We really appreciate speaking to you. Find The Food Teacher at Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Do tell us on UK Health Radio which oils you use in the kitchen and why.
We use extra virgin olive oil, and it's probably partly out of habit, and I think we initially used it because it looks like a quality product.
Thank you. So a huge welcome to Miguel for coming on to UK Health Radio, a real expert in the Mediterranean diet. So thank you, Miguel.
Thank you, Catherine, for having me.
Oh, thank you. So today we're talking about unlocking the secrets of the Mediterranean, basically whose diet has been hailed as a model for success. What do you think are the key components of a Mediterranean diet?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that probably the Mediterranean diet that we see on a plate or on a pyramid on the internet is likely to be slightly different according to the country that you're visiting. And it's probably going to be very different if you go to Greece or Morocco or Spain or Israel. Wherever you go, there's always going to be a slight variation of it. But the main components that characterize the Mediterranean diet and why it may be helpful for health are, for me, especially olive oil. So okay. That's probably the number one element of the Mediterranean diet that I would highlight. The amount of vegetables that are consumed regularly, and that includes raw vegetables, as in salads. I'm born and bred Mediterranean, and
yeah.
There's always a salad at home when I go to see my mum and dad. And I grew up on always having a salad on the side, and it's a big portion of salad, not just a tiny little bowl. So that's probably one of the other characteristics of the Mediterranean diet. Fish as well, and a lot of oily fish. There's a lot more variety in fish and availability of fish around the Mediterranean than we have in the UK, albeit that we are an island. We don't seem to have these huge fishmongers that we tend to see around the Mediterranean with 300 different fish,
wow.
All colors and sizes and so on, which is a feast to the eyes, not least the guts as well. and also I think fiber. So vegetables, I think for me, are very important, because they have they're a very rich source of antioxidants, of vitamins and minerals, but they also are a really rich source of fiber. And this fiber in the Mediterranean is likely to come from vegetables, but also from legumes. So there are a fair amount of pulses, so chickpeas and lentils and all this kind of thing as well.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, you obviously grew up with this kind of diet. Has mm-hmm. your diet changed much since you've sort of moved away from the Mediterranean, or have you managed to sort of retain a lot of the characteristics?
I think it depends on your age group. So I've been in the UK for 22 years now. I'm 43. And I think that if I had actually stayed in Spain, my diet would have changed, because when I go back, I see people my age and certainly younger. who have adopted a lot more of the ready processed meals that may be available in the supermarkets just for convenience. When I go and stay with my mom and dad, their diet is exactly the same as when I was at home. And when I was a teenager, they eat exactly the same things. And, you know, they cook, my mom cooks from scratch. She's one of those cooks that never follows a recipe and everything just happens as if by magic, wow. Never measures anything. She just puts everything in a pot and it just happens. Yeah. And it is very much a matter of how, you know, how old you are and how well you have actually stuck to the traditions, really. Yes. I think if you're probably in your 20s or your 30s, you're more likely to have adopted the bad habits of the of civilization, really, and and the availability, the readily availability in supermarkets of all sorts of things that were not available when I was, you know, when I was living in Spain.
Yeah. So could you explain some of the particular sort of health benefits related with the Mediterranean diet?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned before the olive oil is one of the main things for me, particularly because olive oil has been found to act as a great antioxidant. Antioxidant is a bit of a general term, but what it will do specifically, olive oil, is to act as as an antidote to oxidation in cholesterol. So you know that cholesterol is talked about a fair amount in health circles.
Yeah.
And there is this dichotomy between the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol. So LDL being the bad cholesterol, which may not be that bad, but, you know, this is how we kind of talk about them. LDL or low-density lipoproteins are supposed to be bad. And then you've got the HDL, which is supposed to be the high-density lipoproteins, which are supposed to be helpful and good. So that's the good cholesterol. So yeah. When you sit with your GP and they tell you you've got a fair amount of bad cholesterol, but also you have, you know, low good cholesterol, that's not a really good combination, particularly when LDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, oxidizes, and this means that it can rust inside you. It a bit like when you leave a garden chair out in the winter, and then, you know, if it's a metal chair, it's become a bit rusty with wind and rain and sun and so on. So LDL can contribute to this oxidation or rusting of the cardiovascular system, and olive oil has been shown to be one of those foods that actually prevent this oxidation. So when I'm talking about antioxidants, again, just talking about antioxidants can be a bit superfluous sometimes, but specific antioxidants in olive oil, specifically there's one called hydroxytyrosol and another one called oleocanthal, that have attracted a huge amount of interest by researchers in the last probably 10 years or so. And they are highlighted as being very complex antioxidants. So they just don't do the one thing. They have a multitude of different functions in the body. And this is one of the things that they do very well. They almost de-rust you inside. They prevent this oxidation of the cardiovascular system. And they're only two out of the potentially 300 plus substances in olive oil that will have a very symbiotic and synergistic effect in the manner that I describe. So it's potentially, I would say, olive oil for me is the main component, the main healthy component of the Mediterranean diet across all countries in the Mediterranean. So that would be the main thing for me. Olive oil, obviously, because of this way of working in terms of keeping oxidation down in the arteries, has got a number of different beneficial outcomes. So one would think that the cardiovascular system is likely to be the one most affected by these benefits.
Yeah.
But obviously the cardiovascular system involves supplying blood to the brain and supplying oxygen to the brain. So if the cardiovascular system is healthy in the whole of the body, including the cardiovascular system or the vascular system in the brain, then what's going to happen is that your brain is likely to be healthier and happier as well. So there are associations between a Mediterranean diet and improved cognition, improved brain function. As we age and we worry about neurodegeneration and our brains kind of are slowly losing power, olive oil and a Mediterranean diet in general contribute to this, to the ability to memorize things better, to remember things better, to actually have the ability to function in a younger way. So for our brains to actually remain younger as we age.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it? And are there any particular chronic diseases or health conditions which are actually supported or even reversed by implementing this diet, or by increasing olive oil?
So it's not one of the things that comes up in literature, and it's easy to see once you start reading papers on the Mediterranean diet, is that it's very difficult to just pinpoint the benefits to one individual ingredient. So I think for me, if I had to choose one, it would probably be the olive oil.
Okay.
But researchers will definitely agree around the idea that it's the synergistic effects of all of the components as opposed to just one or the other. Lately, there's a theory that olive oil may be one of the most important ones, and potentially nuts as well, so nuts and seeds as well.
Yes.
So nuts and seeds are, again, a source of various fatty acids that are very important for, again, cardiovascular health and brain health. Our brain is largely made of fat, so when you think that it's a very important organ for the body, it's a vital organ, if you supply the brain with healthy fats, it's likely to function better. That's kind of the overarching simplified theory, and there are a number of different fats that will have beneficial effects on the brain. So going from the polyunsaturated fatty acids from oily fish like sardines, mackerel, and along the lines of that kind of small fish from cold waters, to the monounsaturated fatty acids from olive oil, and to a certain extent, some of the fatty acids in nuts overlap those two. So there are polyunsaturated fatty acids, omega-3 in nuts as well as in oily fish. So you're getting a variety of very similar substances from various sources, all of which will have specific functions in the body, and all of which mixed together result in an overall better clinical outcome.
Yeah. And what's quite interesting is you talked there about a lot of the fats in the diet from sort of nuts, mm-hmm. and the oily fish and the olive oil. And, you know, since the sort of the 70s, a lot of people have become quite obsessed with the whole low fat, the importance of a low fat diet to maintain our weight. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you could talk about that and how that has sort of changed, that thinking has changed, and why the Mediterranean diet is so important in line with that.
Well, I would say that the low-fat advice hasn't actually had the effect that intended. So if you look around you, you'll see plenty of people who've been following a low-fat diet and they haven't really succeeded to keep their weight down. So it's not over the years somebody following a diet that perhaps has replaced the full-fat dairy and full-fat spreads and all this kind of thing with the low-fat versions may not have succeeded in keeping them trim and healthy and fit. So I think there's a lot to be said for diets that actually may not be so low in fat, but actually reaching in healthy fats. So these are the fats that I was referring to. Yes. So I can certainly say that the Mediterranean diet is not a low-fat diet, but equally I don't want to jump on a bandwagon of saying that the Mediterranean diet is a high-fat diet,
no.
Which is, you know, some people are actually saying that, you know, as in it's a trendy high-fat diet, because it's not necessarily high fat, although it has a lot more fat than we are led to believe. And most of it comes from healthy sources, healthy as in olive oil, nuts and seeds, oily fish, but there's a fair amount of saturated fat as well in the Mediterranean diet, so it's by no means exempt of saturated fat.
No.
There's, you know, if you have been around the Mediterranean, there's plenty of cheese. They, you know, if you go to Italy or Spain or France or, you know, and Greece, that they don't go out of their way to create cheeses that you would remember that are actually low fat. So if you go to Spain and have a good quality manchego, that you will remember because it's got a beautiful taste. It's 50% fat, most of which is saturated fat.
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course, you can get low-fat cheese. You can get low-fat cheese everywhere in the UK and in Spain. But the traditional cheeses and dairy products and butters and so on are full fat, and there's a fair amount of that. Cured meats are readily eaten around the Mediterranean. You go just again go to Spain, and there's jamón or prosciutto in Italy. That's a full-fat kind of fat meat. And in fact, the more expensive hams have got a little bit more fat around them. So when you go and actually invest in a really good quality ham made from pigs that have been fed acorns, for example, which is the most expensive ham that you can get in Spain, that has a fair amount of fat when you cut a slice, and you know, a slice of that ham may be £20 or something, because it's very, very expensive. It's, you know, more expensive than gold. And, you know, it's got a fair amount of fat, and it's that is the fat that actually makes it a delicacy. Things like that are probably not represented very well in this romantic idea we have of the Mediterranean diet in countries that are not Mediterranean.
Yeah.
That the Mediterranean diet is very low fat. You know, it's a low fat, high fiber diet, and with nuts and seeds and lots of tomatoes and green vegetables. There's a fair amount of saturated fat as well in it. But I do believe that it's the actual combination of everything, and the fact that you have such an amount of fiber that even if you do have a meal that may have some saturated fat in it, it's how you actually process that fat and how you get rid of the excess fat in the gut by means of having enough fiber in the gut, actually. So when you have that whole of the meal inside you, is how your body's processing it. So again, it's going back to the idea that it's the whole of the Mediterranean diet components together that are healthy, as opposed to just individual parts.
Yeah. And I mean, you hear that they have a very high sort of healthy aging population, don't you? High numbers of centurions. So there must be something good going on in that diet.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think it's also some of the things that you know, you think about, but they are not measured in the studies so readily. So when you read a paper on the Mediterranean diet, it will tell you about, you know, eating vegetables and fruit and olive oil and oily fish and so on. But it's also the fact that you have people going out for walks. My mum and dad go to the market, and they, you know, they walk around and they talk to people, and it's this kind of a connectivity with people that it's important. So you wouldn't just like stay at home and watch TV normally. You would have a kind of routine that involves going outdoors and moving.
Yeah.
It's a lot more physical activity. It may not be exercise, but it's actually moving more, you know. You do see older people actually still doing bits and pieces in the house and managing their own day-to-day lives a lot more than you see in other countries.
Okay.
There's this a lot this this family support as well. Family is a very important element of, I would say, of the Mediterranean diet, and spending time with the family and having a meal with your family that normally can take hours to take place, you know. So having these like 3-hour lunches, it may not be every day. Again, that may be a kind of that romantic idea. Not everybody in Spain has 3-hour siestas and 3-hour lunches with loads of red wine, but you know, it does happen. You know, you would have it at the weekend, or you would have a more extended meal with family or friends and talk. And so there's a lot of this kind of a release of stress by talking, by socializing, that probably we don't have in other countries. I see this a lot as well in kind of how we express emotions and temper. And, you know, we may be shouting at each other 1 minute and the next minute is gone. So I think that release of stress as well, it needs to account for something as well. And that's probably not in a paper. It's something that you're not going to read in a scientific paper, that Spanish people talk more and they shout to each other, but 5 minutes later they are friends again. I think it does account for something that's probably a bit intangible.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you, I'm sure that aside from the diet, there are lots of lifestyle factors, and you've kind of explained a few of those. And I'm sure the sunlight and being outside is also beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. I think the weather needs to account for something as well. The fact that you can rely that from about, you know, April or May, the summer has come. And, you know, and it's there until about October, you know, depending where you live. And you know, you may have the odd day that's overcast, but in general, it's sunny.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just the light and the vibrancy and, you know, and being able to go out and not thinking, I'm not sure whether I can go for a walk today because it's raining. Well, you know, so, yeah, there is that as well.
Yeah. So I just thought I'd just ask you right at the end, what do you think, there was a particular trigger or anything within research that kind of initiated this big interest in the Mediterranean diet?
Well, I think there's always been a bit of a quest as to what is the healthiest diet, and the concept of the Mediterranean diet actually goes back to the 60s and the seven country studies that was done at the time. So it's not a new one. I think it's actually been highlighted by some large-scale trials that have actually happened in Spain, where diets that have been supplemented with olive oil and nuts have actually been shown to be healthier than a regular diet that didn't have that supplementation. So and these studies, particularly this study that has been taking place now, taking into account large amounts of data from thousands of participants in Spain. It's called the PREDIMED study. It's a Mediterranean diet study done in the University of Navarra in Spain. That has actually molded a lot of the other studies that have actually come later, just because of its length and the amount of individuals that have been involved in the data collection. So a large-scale study that goes on for a number of years, and that actually has an outcome that shows that supplementing with olive oil and with nuts, it's beneficial compared to other diets that didn't have that supplementation. I think that's probably been the trigger, certainly in recent years.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's really interesting, and I'm sure there's much more research going on about the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, if you go on any scientific database and type Mediterranean diet, there are papers of all quality levels. So from systematic reviews to randomized controlled trials to just a tiny little study done on two people just trying to test a specific hypothesis. But it's all around the same kind of concept, that the synergy on this is much better than the individual ingredient. So if you just pick apart one or two things of the Mediterranean diet and introduce them to a British diet, I would say the things to pick out and introduce to your British diet, if you just didn't want to change anything at all, olive oil and probably some nuts, that would be the main thing that I would change. But otherwise, it's the combination of the olive oil and the nuts and the vegetables and some fruit. I would say that probably fruit is less than vegetables, because vegetables are richer in fiber and nutrients in general, gram per gram, compared to fruit, and fiber from other sources. So the legumes, I think, are very important and are not really shown so much as a main component, because I think they are downplayed a little bit by the whole grains and the importance of whole grains. And I think you can have a Mediterranean diet without the amount of whole grains that are being claimed to be so important, if that fiber actually comes from vegetables and legumes. And that certainly is important for people who are interested in following a more lower carbohydrate diet as well. So it doesn't need to have this amount of, you know, rice or pasta or, you know, whatever you want to have as your whole grains.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk to us on UK Health Radio, Miguel. And I'm sure the listeners will have found that really, really interesting, and hopefully consider a few of those elements in their own diets.
So thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
A big thank you to both Judy and Miguel for their insights on today's show. The benefits of olive oil as a health food are compelling, and alongside the Mediterranean, the impact on optimal health and vitality can make a real difference. Can you put some of the Mediterranean diet into your life? Well, even if it's just 2 spoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil, that could make a real difference for you. If you'd like more information about the guests on today's show and an opportunity to win a copy of the Olive Oil Diet book, please do take a look at the blog post on my website, thefoodteacher.co.uk, and also follow my Facebook page, The Food Teacher UK. Please do tune in soon for my next show.